Indonesia's our nearest neighbour, and we love her. Most of us, of course, love Bali, but there's a lot more to Indonesia than that, and we've got a lot in common. We're an island nation, they're a nation of islands. They're a democracy, so are we. But you and I know also that a democracy means a lot more than just having the right to vote, to be a proper, healthy democracy. Recently, Professor Todung Mulya Lubis from the University of Indonesia was in Melbourne, quite specifically at the University of Melbourne's Centre for Indonesian Law, Islam and Society. And he participated in a panel on the subject, Is Indonesian Democracy in Peril? Well, we want to know the answer to that. So joining us now is Professor Todung Mulya Lubis. Professor, welcome to Counterpoint.
Thank you for having me.
When Joko Widodo was elected, I think there was, in Australia, a number of people who thought, well, that's great, he's a more moderately minded person, we can relax, things are going to be good in Indonesia. But there are some alarm bells, aren't there?
Yes, we also have higher expectations, you know, upon President Jokowi when he was elected. And I do believe he has all the good intention to strengthen Indonesian economy, Indonesian democracy, Indonesian human rights condition. But again, politics is politics, and he came across a lot of problems along the years.
So you believe that he had, and maybe still does have, the right intentions, but he's gone, as all leaders do, not into a room with a whiteboard on which he can write just what he thinks. He's gone into a room where other parties and other people can also write on that whiteboard, to use a metaphor. And that's proving difficult, isn't it? The views of other people have to be taken into account.
Well, there are a number of things here. So one, he's not a chair of a political party.
Yep.
So he does not have final say, so to speak. Secondly, his party is not the majority controlling party in the governments. So his party has to team up with other political parties as well. Now, in addition to that, of course, you know, you cannot ignore the influence of former military generals in Indonesian politics, although military does not play a role in politics anymore.
But the former generals do have an influence.
The former generals, they are regarded as civilians, yeah. But again, yeah, former generals is former generals. You know, they have their own mindset, they have their own agenda.
What are the examples you would use to make or support the claim that democracy in Indonesia is at risk?
Well, I still believe that constitutionally, Indonesia has a strong constitutional guarantee as far as democracy is concerned. We have regular election at the local level as well as at the national level. We have terms limit of the president. We have set up a lot of state auxiliary agencies complementing the trias politica, executive, legislators, and judiciary. So we have all this mechanism in place. But again, we have also to take into consideration the fact that in practice, it is not as easy as we thought. I talk about the military in my lectures at Silis here, because I think there's an unspoken tension between the military and the civilian. And the civilian, the military, of course, is not any longer in power, like under President Suharto at the time. Now we have a civilian supremacy, but even that, the military still plays a very important role in our politics. The fact that the military does not anymore holding political position like in the past does not really eliminate their influence at all.
How do you see the influence of the military playing out in Indonesia?
Well, perhaps, you know, I should qualify my statement here. When I talk about the military influence, I'm talking about the political military generals, you know, who still have political aspirations of the past. But military as an institution, yeah, has no political place, position in our government. But I think, you know, sometimes we cannot really draw the line, because within the military, it is the commander-in-chief that has a say. The others have to follow the commander-in-chief. So statements issued and made by the commander-in-chief quite often overstep his boundaries. That worries me.
And are there people in Indonesia prepared to speak out and call out the military leaders when they overstep their boundaries? Or is that not acceptable in Indonesia to publicly call the military leaders into line?
People have the right to say that openly in media, in public lectures, in social media. But a lot of people also don't have courage at all, you know, to say that publicly. But it is very common knowledge, you know, within the public at large that there's unspoken tension. There's a tension between the civilian and the military. Mm. The military still believe that they are the one who can unite the country. And the civilian, unfortunately, are not really that united. This is a multi-party state. When you're talking about multi-party state, you know, you have to share your power. Now, in sharing the powers, they have to compete. Now, whether the competition is conducted in healthy manners, that is a question, you know.
And do I gather by that that you don't think the competition is always conducted in a healthy way?
Well, look what happened with the election of Jakarta governors a couple months ago. All parties, of course, you know, participates, but the fact that religion has been used and misused at the political level, that concerned me. And I think that is not the way it should be. Bringing back religion into politics, bringing back identity into politics would be very counterproductive to the state of Indonesia as a unitary state, as a pluralistic state. So that's what happened. And that may happen again, you know.
And Professor, can I ask you about civil society in Indonesia?
Okay.
Civil society plays an important role. I know from my past time in politics myself, they can be a bit annoying, but it's a vital role that civil institutions play in a free society. How are they faring in Indonesia at the moment?
Civil society still play an important role. The problem faced by the civil society is the numbers is getting thinner and thinner. Why? Because Reformasi opened the door for social activists, for civil society people to join the government, to join the political parties. Now it is a time where you have all these young people coming into the top leadership of civil society. So this is a process that we have to go through and we are going through at the moment. And under these circumstances where, unlike in the past, under the new order, we were all united because we have the same enemy. Now, I don't think the civil society facing a similar situation. I should say, yes, they still play an important role, but there are a problem faced by them in terms of leadership, in terms of unity of the civil society.
Mm. I'm talking with Professor Todung Mulya Lubis from the University of Indonesia about Indonesian democracy and the challenges it faces at this time. Professor, you mentioned about the young people in Indonesia. Do you think that there's a desire to shift back to being a more radical Islamic state, or do the young people see the benefits of what I loosely call a Western democracy? And would they be prepared to show leadership themselves to maintain that?
Well, majority of Indonesians are Muslims. Young people are part of this group, of course. And I believe there is only small elements of young Muslims are radicals. Most of them are tolerant Muslims, very moderate Muslims. But the voice by the radicals can be heard anywhere and louder and louder. So that's what we are facing. But in addition to that, I should admit that, yeah, there's a growing numbers of radicals within the young people. Why? Because they are not happy with the government, perhaps, you know. They are not happy with the political parties that are not accommodate their aspirations. And thirdly, I think the link, the influence they receive triggered by all this international networking, either it is through social media or through other channels, that radicalize their mindset, their thinking, their ideology.
And is there a number of leaders, or just one? Are there any, is a better question perhaps, in Indonesia who can see this risk and who might bring Indonesia together?
A lot of Indonesian leaders see the sign of dangers of the rise of the radicalism, yes. But we are facing an election in 2018, regional election mostly, and then 2019 presidential election. So the name of the game is electability. So people who still want to maintain their electability would be restrained by this. So speaking up against that openly, that might not be good things for them.
Yes.
So this is one thing. It reminds me again with Abdurrahman Wahid, the late president of Indonesia. And Abdurrahman Wahid is the one that saw these dangers, saw this sign, and decided to fight them. Now, we don't have people like Abdurrahman Wahid at the moment within the Islamic community.
Well, this isn't a very encouraging picture, I have to say, Professor. Not an encouraging picture at all. If I can just paraphrase what I think you've said, let me say it back to you in another way and see if you agree with this, that because you've got regional and national elections coming up in the next year or two, leaders are, in fact, not showing leadership and biting their tongue, hoping to curry favour with all sides, and that's left a void in which unpleasantness can grow. Is that a fair description of your view?
I think it is fair. I think the nationalist leader of Indonesia, coming from political parties as well as outside of political parties, must speak up more and more. Avoiding this issue is not the answer.
Yeah, no, look, Professor, I couldn't agree with you more. We try and teach children, don't we, that when they see something that's not right at school, if they see another kid being bullied, they should speak up. If they see something they don't agree with, they should speak up. And then when we realise that our leaders can see these things and they don't speak up, it's understandably a worry. But nonetheless, Professor Todung Mulya Lubis, thank you very much for joining us on Counterpoint today.
Thank you for having me.
That was Professor Todung Mulya Lubis from the University of Indonesia, one of Indonesia's leading human rights lawyers. You're listening to Counterpoint here on RN.